Thank you. And now, Pastor Comparé.
Ordinarily, I don't let anybody else affect the course of what I want to talk about. Tonight I'm going to because I feel it's time to reply to a certain minister. This gentleman has quite an extensive radio ministry, headquarters back in Minneapolis. He puts out a magazine. He reaches a great many people. He has been on many occasions a distinct force for good. And because of his large following, he can be an equally disastrous force for evil. In the April issue of his magazine, he has taken quite a crack at me, not by name, but by the things that you know we have been learning out of the Bible. The other thing that this pastor takes a crack at here, and this seems to bother him greatly, is the matter of the satanic Cain seed line. This gentleman has gotten along notably well with the descendants of Cain. I have never seen any indication of any ill feeling between them on either side. And he becomes greatly incensed that some of us have pointed out that the descendants of Satan through Cain are in the world today. And he says that this is one of the most vicious of unscriptural doctrines. So I thought it was time for us to review it. You have known of the fact, of course, the satanic origin of the Jewish people. But I don't know whether many of you have seen how much proof there is in the Bible. And I thought it was just about time to get down to that proof. Now let's start in the beginning. Satan, of course, was not a serpent. The thing that deceived Eve and seduced Eve was not a scaly thing wiggling along the ground. The Hebrew word nokash means enchanter or magician. Now, a fallen angel, retaining still a lot of his angelic powers, no doubt could be very much of an enchanter or magician. Now, his children, and I mean children, not just followers, through the centuries, used a serpent as a symbol or emblem of their ancestors, until finally they attached a secondary meaning of serpent to the word, but it is not in the root meaning of the word at all. And the Bible was never so ridiculous as to suggest that a snake accomplished all of this. Now, in Genesis 3, verses 2 and 3, you remember Satan has said to Eve, "Why, is it really true that God said you can't eat of any tree in the garden?" And she replies to him, here's how it reads in the Hebrew, "And the woman said unto the enchanter, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of," now I'm quoting from King James Version, and I'm going to correct it then as I go, "but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die." Now let's see what it actually says in the Hebrew. Fruit, that's the Hebrew word pirkok, meaning progeny, brood, children, descendants. Do you talk about the children of a walnut tree or an apple tree? Of course you don't. Now, of the pirkok, of the descendants of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it. And that touch is the Hebrew word naga, which is a more polite expression meaning to have sexual intercourse with. Do you need to be warned not to have sexual intercourse with an apple? Of course not. It isn't that kind of a tree. Now, God had millions of the pre-Adamic Asiatic and African peoples around. If he just wanted somebody wide between the shoulders and narrow between the eyes to spade up the garden, he had them. He didn't have to create a special being for that. Satan had been the governor of this planet until he forfeited the right to it by rebellion. God sent Adam here, and you remember that the last verse in the third chapter of the Gospel of Luke tells you that Adam was the son of God. It doesn't say that about any of these pre-Adamic peoples mentioned in Genesis chapter 1. Adam was the son of God, and he sent Adam here to take over by force, kick Satan out, and govern this planet. And the trees in the Garden of Eden were the family trees of nations and races. Now, they were supposed not to intermingle with these people. If these Negroes and Mongoloids were all that God wanted, he already had them. What he created a different and separate being for was to have a different sort of person whom the Mongoloids and the Negroids never could produce. The Hebrew word Adam, which we translate Adam, means of a rosy, fair complexion. Adam was the first person of a specifically created new race. Well, Adam and Eve were told, don't you mongrelize your race now with these pre-Adamite people in the world. Now, when you come to Genesis 3, verse 15, God has called Adam, Eve, and Satan before him to give an accounting of their misdeeds. And according to your King James Version, Eve says the Satan beguiled, she says serpent. The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat thereof. Well, now, again, it's that Hebrew word nokash, meaning enchanter. But instead of beguiled, the Hebrew word noshaw means seduced. Now, beguiled is no more than deceived. Somebody who sells you some mining stock in a mine that doesn't have any good ore in it beguiles you. But this word means seduced. And Yahweh God said unto the woman, what is this thou hast done? And the woman said, the enchanter seduced me. That's what it says in the Hebrew. And Cain was the product thereof. So in reply, in Genesis 3:15, God says this, he's speaking to Satan, I will put enmity between thee, Satan, and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. Now the same Hebrew word zera, literally meaning seed, and it could be used to grains of wheat, for example, but it's used throughout the Bible as meaning the descendants of a person, too, children, posterity. Thy seed, Zera, and her seed, Zera. In other words, Satan was to have just as literal children in this world as was Eve, because the very same word with the very same meaning is used for it. Now our minister back in Minnesota says, oh, that doesn't mean anything, because he quotes Genesis 4, verse 1. And Adam knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain. Now, you notice what is not said is more significant here than what is said. The Bible nowhere says that Adam begot Cain. Remember now, as you've read the Old Testament, the monotonous regularity with which it always says, and so begat who's this, and who's this begat what's his name, and what's his name begat somebody else, and so on. It was important to know your ancestry in those days because you didn't get your citizenship for two box tops and a dime. You got it because your ancestors for 20 generations back were Israelites, and no other way. Now, Adam knew his wife and she conceived. Now, I can tell you something and I can prove every bit of it by witnesses. I went to a movie one night, and the next morning the sun rose in the east. Now, I did not say the one caused the other. I said two things happened, one of them first and the other second. And they did, but I never said there was cause and effect. And the Bible never says there was cause and effect here. Now, if you want further proof out of this, you go right on to the fifth chapter of Genesis, which gives the list of Adam's descendants. And you notice that Cain is not mentioned. Neither Cain nor Abel are mentioned among descendants of Adam. And if you say, well, Abel might have been omitted because we don't know. He probably was killed before he left any descendants of his own. That's not true of Cain because the Bible traces Cain's descendants for six generations, naming them on down the line. But never once does it say that Cain was a descendant of Adam. Never in any way, shape, form, or manner. The first time it says Adam begot a child is Genesis 5, verse 3. And Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness and after his image, and called his name Seth, not Cain. So the satanic bloodline crept in definitely with Cain. Possibly earlier among the pre-Adamic peoples. Now there were pre-Adamic peoples who were not necessarily satanic. There were some pre-Adamic people into whom the satanic bloodline came, and there were even some of the descendants of Adam who probably mongrelized. Well, in fact, it's evident that they did from the very fact that those living around Noah were wiped out by the flood, because the Bible tells you that Noah was perfect in his ancestry. No mongrelization. And he was the only one left who was. And that's why the mongrelized Adamites around him were wiped out by the flood. Well, the real descendants of Adam were multiplying. And then you come to the fact of the satanic bloodline getting in there. Now remember, God had announced his purpose that he was going to take back the world from satanic domination. He was going to rule it according to his purposes, and he was going to rule it through his children, going down through Adam. Now, what is the obvious move on Satan's part to thwart that? To mongrelize the two bloodlines so he can sneer in God's face. Well, these are my children now. Where are yours? All these have my bloodline in them. And that's exactly what he set out to do. Now, Genesis 6, verse 2, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all they chose. Well, now you don't get the full significance of it in that translation. The sons of God, Bene HaElohim, the sons of the Elohim. Now you remember, the word, Hebrew word El, the mighty, is used as a title of God. Derived from it, Eloah, singular, is practically always translated God or a God, and a correct translation. And Elohim is the plural, meaning God. You take from the 82nd Psalm, God standeth in the congregation of the gods. He says to them, I have said, ye are all Elohim and children of the Most High. Your King James Version just says, I says ye are gods, but it's a correct translation there of the Elohim. The sons of the Elohim saw the daughters of Adam, that they were fair. Now the Elohim are the children of God, and to that extent distinct from the angels, who are merely servant spirits. Now, we're not given too much detail on the rebellion that took place in heaven, but the Bible very definitely suggests that along with a number of the angels, some even of the Elohim, the sons of God, followed Satan into rebellion. Now, some people have tried to say, well, since the Adamites are spoken of as the sons of God, this is merely the Adamites here. But the sons of God saw the daughters of Adam, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all whom they chose. And it's written with obvious disapproval. Well, now, the male descendants of Adam were not allowed by God's law to marry anybody but the daughters of Adam. So if they were marrying within their own racial line here, it couldn't have been spoken of with disapproval. So the Bnei HaElohim are evidently of those Elohim who followed Satan into rebellion. Now you go on into Genesis 6, verse 4, speaking of the same thing, and again it's botched up in your King James Version. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Well, now what it says in the Hebrew, there were the Nephilim, the fallen ones, in the earth in those days. Sure, the fallen angels. That's what the Bible calls them so many places. The angels who had not kept their first estate, who had fallen from heaven and from their former powers. When the sons of God, and it's again the Bnei HaElohim, came in unto the daughters of Adam. So it's the same thing. So here you have the spreading of the satanic bloodline. And the Bible in Genesis chapter 6 goes on to trace many of these descendants of the fallen angels. You find that all through Palestine, on both sides of the Jordan River, clear down into Mount Seir, the rugged mountain range southeast of the Dead Sea, where Esau and his family lived, all through there, you had these various people with the satanic bloodline in them. Now, there are two different places, one in Isaiah, the other, as I remember it, in Ezekiel, where it speaks of what it calls a king or prince, in the one case of Babylon and the other case of Tyre. But nevertheless, it speaks of him in language which couldn't possibly apply to anybody except Satan. Indicating, therefore, that at some time or other, Satan had incarnated in the form of these various kings, one king of Babylon, one king of Tyre. Now, don't think that that's so impossible, because remember the many times that your Old Testament tells of these angels appearing in very solid form. They came and talked with Abraham on several occasions. One of them, you remember, wrestled with Jacob most all night. Another, when they were about to cross the Jordan and take over Palestine, Joshua, making a scouting trip around his camp, saw this armed man standing there in armor and with sword, and he said, "Are you for us or for the enemy?" And the man said, "I'm the captain of the hosts of Yahweh." So, let's take Isaiah 14, verses 12 to 21, and note now that this couldn't possibly apply to anyone except Satan himself. And I'm taking it out of the King James Version, too, for the benefit of my friend back in Minnesota. "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north." That is, I'm going to be ruler over Israel, God's people. "I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch. and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Now, you couldn't say that about any king of Babylon. The only one who may possibly have failed to get burial in an elaborate tomb and all that might have been Belshazzar, but he was nothing but an incompetent drunkard. And nobody ever could say of him that he was the one who shook kingdoms and so on. He didn't even rule Babylon. He just stayed drunk. Now, this is speaking throughout, then, of Lucifer. Now note how it goes on. I'm reading from the same passage, Isaiah 14, verses 12 to 21. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. And that word translated his children there is the Hebrew word beni, sons. So, Satan obviously was to have children who could be slaughtered to keep them from multiplying to the point where they would take over and rule the world. Old Testament, sure. Now let's see what the New Testament has to say about it. This gentleman back in Minnesota claims to be a Christian. So I want to call his attention to the words of Jesus Christ and see whether he's going to say Jesus Christ was a liar or mistaken, or whether he's willing to admit perhaps he was mistaken, because you can't reconcile the two. Jesus plainly and in a number of places says that the devil has children, not mere followers. You remember the parable of the tares and the wheat. He spoke of the farmer who sowed good seed in his field, and his enemy came along during the night time and sowed these poisonous weeds, the tares, among the wheat. And when the farmer's servants saw the tares growing among the wheat, they asked, well, shall we go out and pull them up now? And he said, no, you might pull up some of the wheat with them. Let them grow together until the time of the harvest, and then the reapers will first gather the tares into bundles to be burned, and then put the wheat in my barn. So now he goes on to explain this parable to his disciples. Matthew 13, verse 38. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. And he uses here the Greek word phoi, plural of phoi, meaning sons. The good seed are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the children, phoi, of the wicked one. So Satan has just as true children in this world as does God. Again, speaking to the Pharisees, who, as you know, were Jews, Matthew 12, verse 34. Your King James Version botches it up to an extent that seems to me often to be willful. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. But the word is not generation at all. Generation is a number of people of not two different age living at the same time. You, for example, constitute one generation. He wasn't talking just about the people living then. They weren't any more wicked than the generation that lived before them or the generation that lived after them. What he said, it's the Greek word genema, which means children or offspring. Oh, children of vipers. Sure. All these centuries you have used the serpent as the emblem or symbol for your ancestor, all right? Taking you at your own word, you children of serpents right down the line, vipers. He knew who they were. Again, Matthew 23, verses 29 through 35. Go unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because ye build the tombs of the prophets, and garnish the sepulchers of the righteous and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore ye are witnesses unto yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. And here again it's that Greek word huioi. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye genema, ye offspring, children of vipers. How can ye escape the damnation of hell, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Berechiah, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar? Now, does my friend back in Minnesota say that Jesus Christ was so unjust that he was going to punish these Jews for the murder of Abel if they weren't even descendants of Cain? Of course not. He was tracing here the children of the serpent, the enchanter, Satan, all down through the centuries, had murdered the righteous, including all the prophets, right down the line. So he said, upon you, upon this race, these descendants of the serpent, will come the responsibility for all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel, even unto the blood of Zechariah. So again, he was recognizing this. Now, throughout, the Bible speaks of two seed lines, and I do not mean merely somebody who has been converted to good views or bad. The Bible has no reference here at all to what your religious point of view may be. It is talking about literal descendants. In Romans 8, verse 16, the Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. Now the word children there, the Greek word technon, meaning one born a child, not adopted. Nothing is more fallacious than this church doctrine about being adopted as the children of God. You read what Paul said on the subject, and nothing in it can justify the mistranslation of that as adoption. He says that before the coming of Christ, we were held in bondage under the law, governed strictly by the law. And he said we are just like an heir under age. He has inherited from his father who has died all the estate, but he's still a minor, and he is not allowed to take control of it. He is under the control of trustees and governors, appointed guardians appointed by his father, until he comes of age. And Paul says all the time he is the owner of it all, and yet he is controlled as though he was just a servant. Now you couldn't say that about anybody who was adopted. If you take somebody else's illegitimate child and decide you're going to adopt him, is he already the owner of your property before you adopt him? Of course not. And Paul wasn't stupid enough to think he was. Only the churchmen are stupid enough for that. Now, what Paul was talking about was the coming of age ceremony by which they marked the fact that the heir had now become of full age and his property was put into his hands to control as an adult. So, here in Romans 8, verse 16, the Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, technon, one born a child, not adopted. Romans 9, verse 26, and he's quoting here from Hosea 1, verse 10. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there they shall be called the children of the living God. And again, it's that Greek word huioi, sons. We are the born, not adopted, children of God. Now, as to the born, not adopted or converted, children of the devil, take Acts verse 13, or chapter 13, verse 10. It tells about a Jew sorcerer, Elymas, who opposed Paul when Paul was trying to make some converts. Then Saul, who also is called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him and said, O full of all subtlety and all mischief, thou child of the devil, that Greek word huios, a son, thou son of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? Paul was under no illusions. He knew them to be children of the devil by perfectly legitimate ancestry, for what it's worth. Now, the child of a calf is another cat, isn't it? The child of a Negro is a Negro. And a child of God is what? Now, he's not as wise, and he's not as powerful, and he's not as important as his father. But nevertheless, he partakes within his limitations of the godly nature. And that's what the Bible tells us about it, and that is exactly why we of God's people Israel are held to so much greater responsibility than the other people. After all, you can't expect a Negro to act like anything but a Negro, but a child of God is expected to act like one. Now, the child of a devil is what? Another devil, isn't he? Now, John 6, verses 70 to 71. It's part of a very important passage. It begins, Jesus asked his disciples, who were all gathered together there, he said, whom do men say that I am? And they said, oh, some say that you're this prophet or that one who's been reincarnated and come back here. He said, whom do you say that I am? And Peter spoke up and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. So he said, blessed art thou, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood didn't tell you that fact. It was my Father in heaven who told you that. And he said, upon this rock, Petra, the solid bedrock of the earth, I will found my church. Now, he didn't say he was going to found it upon Peter, Simon Peter, Petros, a little stone. In Greek, Petros means a little stone just barely bigger than a pebble. Was he going to found his church on a pebble that anybody could kick out from under it? No. I will found it upon Petra, the solid bedrock of the earth. You remember the example that he gave, the parable? He said one man had built his house on the sand, and the storm came along, and the flood washed the sand out from under it, and it collapsed. But another man built his house upon the rock, Petra, the bedrock, and the storm beat upon it, and it couldn't do anything to it because he was founded on a rock, Petra. If any of you have ever been up the Yosemite Valley and seen that enormous cliff, El Capitan, you've seen a good example of what the Greeks meant by the word Petra. You could build a castle on that and nothing could blow it off or wash it off. So, upon this fact that you have recognized who I am, the Christ, the Son of the living God, upon that I will found my church, and the gates of death shall not prevail against it. Then he goes on, John 6, verses 70 and 71. Jesus answered them, have not I chosen you 12, and one of you is a devil? He spoke of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him, being one of the 12. Now, our Savior was not just being vulgarly abusive and calling people names. He never did that. Oh, he denounced these Pharisees. Sure. He called them hypocrites, and they were. He wasn't abusing them with lying epithets. They were hypocrites, so he was accurate. And when he called them the children of serpents, well, they had said they were. That was the emblem they used all the way through. And when he said that one of them was a devil, he wasn't being abusive. He was speaking the literal truth. Now, the first epistle of John again states the existence of these two seed lines. 1 John 2, verse 29. If ye know that he is righteous, ye know that everyone that does righteousness is born of him. 1 John 3, verse 2. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. And that Greek word technon, a born child. Not adopted, a born child of God. 1 John 3, verses 9 and 10. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin because he is born of God. Now, by that he didn't mean that none of us commit any sins at all, because if that were the case, we wouldn't have needed the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross. We do all have our sins, but you've noticed that people are divided into two classes. The one who are only sorry because they don't get a chance to sin more, and the others who are sorry because they have sinned a little. So what he means there is, whoever is born of God doesn't habitually sin. So he says, in this the children, that Greek word technon, the children of God are manifest, and the children, and again it's that same Greek word technon, of the devil. Remember, he's talked about us as the born technon of God and the born technon of the devil. Now, 1 John 3, verse 12. He said that as to those who are our brothers, not the children of Satan, that we should love them and not be as Cain. Your King James Version says, who was of that wicked one and slew his brother. So the people who have churchianity rather than Christianity say, oh, well, now you know it doesn't say the son of. So it just means that Cain was morally associated with Satan and bad and reprobate and so on. Well, now, I believe my friend back in Minnesota will concede that there was just one Greek language at that time, and so they didn't have two separate Greek languages. One to write the Gospel according to Luke in a different Greek language in which to write the first epistle of John. As you know, different languages have their different idioms. In many languages, one word may have a meaning that can only be expressed by a phrase of several English words. I think nearly all of you have a King James Version of the Bible, and you know that in most editions of it, some words are printed in italics. And those words in italics are the words which the translators added because they thought it was necessary to give the English the same meaning that the Hebrew or the Greek had without these added words. Now, the third chapter of Luke traces the genealogy of Jesus Christ, starting with Jesus Christ and running backward all the way to Adam. So let's start with the 23rd verse of Luke chapter 3, as it reads in the King James Version. And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli. But those words, the son, are in italics, showing that they were not in the Greek and the translators added them. Which was the son of Matthath, again added in italics, which was the son of Levi, in italics, which was the son of Melchi, italics, which was the son of Janna, and so forth, always in italics. Now, let's read this the way my friend would read 1 John 3, verse 12. The son of Joseph, who was as big a reprobate as Heli, who was morally no better than Mathat, who was as bad as Levi, is that the way he thinks Luke wrote this? And if that is not the meaning of the Greek here in Luke, it's not the meaning of the same Greek phrase over in 1 John 3, verse 12. So where it says, not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, in Greek it means who was the son of that wicked one. In Greek, if you say John was of William, you have said John was the son of William. Now, the better modern translations recognize this. For example, Weymouth, the same verse, 1 John 3, verse 12. We are not to resemble Cain, who was a child of the evil one and killed his brother. Philip's translation. We are none of us to have the spirit of Cain, who was a son of the devil and murdered his brother. The New English Bible, a magnificent job of translation, by the way. Unlike Cain, who was a child of the evil one and murdered his brother. Now, the thing which this gentleman cites in his magazine